Okay, if we're ready to start, and just for our final session for the day, well, actually, our final session is probably a bit later in the pub. However, our final session sitting around here today, and certainly last but not least, I'd really have great pleasure in welcoming Steve and Alicia, who are going to share some information with us around how they operate at the FASAC, and you know, hope that they have got something out of the discussions that we've had today. And certainly my objective for this council in terms of their presentation is in fact that we get an idea of how FASAC operates, you know, for us to think about in terms of glean any ideas to help us to do our job a better way, or whether there are any things that we can do to collaborate to, again, help us to do our job a better way. So with that, thank you for being here. And Steve, I pass over to you.
Good. Thank you, Joanna. I hope you all can hear me okay. Good. Thank you. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the invitation. And we've actually been talking to Joanna and Ada for probably a year and a half now, and we have a regular calls where we kind of share agendas and what we're doing, what they're doing. So it's been a wonderful reciprocal relationship, as we've probably learned more from her than she has learned from us, but it's been great. And it's also nice to see so many familiar faces around the room here. I was surprised how many of you I knew and had a pleasure to meet so many more. So please, at the cocktail hour, if we're all still standing, come up and say hello. We'd love to have a chance to chat. So today we are really very pleased to, you know, with Alicia Posta to present FASAC and a discussion of what our council does. Alicia and I are going to have a number of comments about the process. If you have questions, we're delighted to take questions. Some of the responses we have will be our own. They may not necessarily be those that would be in accordance with how all the board members may think. Unlike your board, where you have 14 board members, we have seven FASB board members, which we'll talk about. So on any given day, those seven board members might have seven different opinions. So we'll try to convey those as best as we can. Just a brief overview of the session. We're going to cover the following areas. We're going to introduce the information about FASAC's role and structure, and then the topics we covered the past 2 years, and I'll be covering those. And then Alicia Posta will talk about our FASAC efforts to conduct a 2015 survey on the FASB agenda priorities, which FASB in turn uses to set their priorities for the coming year. Just put through the next slide. That's good. So I thought I might spend some time just talking about the board participation and the input they get in their process. You'll see a slide here which is fairly complicated with lots of circles, but in the center, of course, is the FASB. We'll talk more about their overall structure and the FAF and how they work together. But the FASB actually gets input from a number of groups, including advisory groups, and there are four advisory groups shown here. The first is FASAC, the Financial Accounting Standards Advisory Council, of which I'm chair, and Alicia's executive director, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. They also get input from the Small Business Advisory Council, which meets twice a year, from an Investor Advisory Council, which meets 3 to 4 times per year, and then also a Not-for-Profit Advisory Council, which meets anywhere between roughly, you know, 2 or 3 times per year. For the meetings for FASAC and for the SBAC, normally the board will attend all those meetings, or all the board members attend those meetings. For the Investor Advisory Committee and for Not-for-Profit Advisory Committee, different members of the board may attend, but not all board members normally attend every single meeting. Going down the left-hand side of the page, there's also a post-implementation review group, which meets and provides input to the board, much like your post-implementation process. They get input on proposals, so much as when you have a release, they'll have information on comment letters. They also get technical inquiries. They'll have liaison meetings. So when I was at my prior employer, we had a lot of analysts. The FASB members would ask to meet with the analysts, and we'd have them come over and spend, you know, 2-3 hours talking to analysts about issues and how analysts were reviewing particular proposals. There's an emerging issues task force group, which also tries to interpret existing rules. And there also are project working groups. The project working groups, for example, can be leasing, or revenue recognition, or impairment, or not-for-profit financial statements, and they usually vary between, you know, 4, 5, 6 at a time. And then they also get input from investor outreach, which I mentioned. They have roundtables, they have calls, they have roadshows where they go out proactively and present information on what the board is doing and seek input on topics. And finally, there's the Private Company Council. And the PCC deals with, you know, private companies and some of their issues and really provides for a tailoring of a broader gap for some of those unique needs that they have. So in addition, they'll also do field tests and visits. They'll meet with regulators, which Jim Schnur knows. They'll meet with academics and also use a lot of academic research and ask the academics to help them do research in particular areas and also have just normal ad hoc constituent meetings. So that's just a broad survey of what the FASB does for input. Now, the overall organizational structure is actually very similar to your structure. It may look familiar, actually. They have a group called the Financial Accounting Foundation, or the FAF. And the FAF has between roughly 14 and 18 trustees, it varies a bit, that oversee a number of activities. They first of all oversee a group called the Government Accounting Standards Advisory Council and the Government Accounting Standards Advisory Board. So GASB really provides the guidance for governmental entities. GASAC is a lot like FASAC. It's the advisory board to the GASB. And to give you an idea of the challenges we have, like you have, when you talk about the constituency of your members, for our Government Accounting Standards Board, the members of that advisory board include people from CPA institutes, people who have backgrounds in state governments, who are with bond rating agencies, Native American entities, municipal analysts, state administrators, state budget officers, counties, colleges and universities, bond buyers, investment company institutes, the insurance industry, just a very broad constituency designed to meet the perspective of all the entities who are involved in interfacing with the Government Accounting Standards Board. There are 7 members on the GASB, and there also are 7 members, as I mentioned, on the FASB. FASAC, again, I'll talk about in a bit more detail in just a second. There's also the PCC, and the PCC has, I think, 9 members and 1 chair that meet on a regular basis. The FASB, as I mentioned, also has the Emerging Issues Task Force, and there are about a dozen people who sit on the EITF. And, of course, they have a whole support mechanism to provide guidance to them. So within the advisory groups and how they fit into the organization, some are within the charter and others were formed by the FASB more recently. So the structure of the FASB and FASAC is very similar to the structure of GASB and GASAC, as I mentioned. The roles of the trustees in the foundation actually looks a lot like the role of your trustees in foundation. Their responsibilities are to establish and improve financial accounting and reporting standards, to educate constituents about those standards, to provide oversight, administration, and also oversee the finances of the standard-setting boards, the Financial Accounting Standards Board, the Government Accounting Standards Board, and their advisory councils, and also to protect the independence and integrity of the standard-setting process. So I think if we had added the bullet point to provide for global adoption of IFRS, it probably would be the exact same as yours, but I don't think our group is ready to say that one of their jobs is to provide for global adoption of IFRS yet. So, but the standards are very, objectives are very, very similar. The funding is different, and I really enjoyed hearing kind of the issues on funding. I wasn't in that breakout group, but I really enjoyed the summary, because our funding is not all that different with a few caveats. And I thought I would just mention some of the numbers. At one of the breaks, someone asked me, you know, how does your funding work and how do you compare with ours? And I was, you know, I didn't know how to answer it specifically, but as I thought about it, so the FASB, I think you said your revenues were somewhere around roughly 30 million pounds or somewhere in that range, I think, as I recall. So the FASB, there are a number of components of what the FAF oversees. If you look at the groups up here between the FASB and GASB in particular, the FASB has about $40 million in budget expense. And the GASB has about $10 million, and then they have roughly $16 million in expense for subscriptions and other activities. So their total expenditures are about $56 million budgeted for 2015. Their revenues are about $24 million from revenue that they receive from entities that are public filers in the U.S., and they're roughly around 8,200 public filers in the U.S., and they're charged a fee under Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. And that fee amounts to about $24 million. They also have about $7 million they get from entities that provide support for the GASB, and those are primarily municipal bond broker-dealers. And then also they have about $18 million they obtain from subscriptions. So you can see a lot of their revenue is from a source which is, I think your revenues were around $4 million in subscriptions, somewhere in that range, Hans. It's a very big number from subscriptions. So if you add those numbers together, it's about $56 million in expenses and about $49 million in revenue. So there's about a $7 million gap. The FASB and FAF have a reserve fund. So in prior times, they had an excess. Part of that excess is being used to fund the deficit year by year, and it's a conscious decision of how much of that is used to fund the needs of the organization. So, but it's interesting because if you think about it, so their revenues from subscriptions are $4 million. I'm sorry, their expenses are $4 million. Their revenues are $18 million. So a big portion of publications and subscriptions really help to provide the funding for the activities of FASB and GASB. Okay. So let's talk a bit more about FASAC. So FASAC was founded in 1973 and was formed about the same time the FASB was formed. And in fact, the FASAC's role is articulated in the bylaws of the foundation. So at first, the FASB chairman also served as the FASAC chairman. And since about 1979, they've had an outside or external chairman who's been in that role. And the backgrounds of the chairman have varied significantly. So if you look at it, so my background is I spent 30 years with an accounting firm. I spent 9 years with a money manager as CFO and on the business side of BlackRock. And then now I'm a retired board of director sitting on boards. And you know, and I found that that's useful because it takes so much time in this role, as Joanna knows, that unless you're retired, I don't know how you can do it. But it takes a lot of time. So the size of FASAC has also varied over the years and is normally between 30 and 40 members. Right now we're about 33 members. But the bylaws require that we have no less than 20 members. So as you can see looking around the room, we're substantially smaller than you are. Your advisory council is around 46 or so. And I can see, you know, the criteria we have are unique. There's no limitation on the number we can have, but first of all, our room is much smaller at FASB's offices. So one criteria would be the size of the room, which if you look at the number of seats you can put in a table and you add in the FASB board members, and all the board members attend our meetings, and the few staff are at the table, and we quite often have invited guests, we can seat enough people, so 33 or so, maybe 34 if they sit like this, can squeeze around the table. But my criteria is I need to have a table small enough where I can see the name tags at the opposite end. So I would not qualify in this room. Alicia helps me out quite a bit on the names, though. But, and also, I think that what we like about a small group, by the way, is just cohesiveness. And I'll talk a bit about what we do to help develop that cohesiveness. But sometimes having a smaller room where you're together and you see people just helps that sense of freedom to talk and a natural exchange. Our members serve one-year terms. They can be reappointed up to three times, so I guess four-year terms in total. And we usually try to have a staggered rotation. And members technically are appointed by the trustees, not by Alicia or me, by the trustees of the foundation. And we have much the same process as you do. We have a number of people to whom we send letters soliciting names. We get quite a few in. I'm not sure we have the 10-to-1 ratio or 5-to-1 ratio you have, but we still get a lot of people who submit their names. We have a lot more preparers who submit than users, and we try to have, like you do, a nice mix, and I'll talk about that in just a second also. This year we have about maybe a third of our body is turning over, so it's always a challenge finding the right mix from the number of people you need. So if you think about if we have on average 4-year terms, that's pretty close, a little higher this year. And some of that is forced, by the way. So we have a pretty good idea, given the size of the room, on who participates and who doesn't. And so, not to sound Machiavellian, but our goal is to provide value to the board. And if people don't participate, they don't add value, then we look to see how we can bring in that value. And that sometimes means we have conversations with people and say, you've done a great job, you know, love you, made a good contribution, but, you know, like to encourage you to allow us to find room for other board members. And part of that is because the world changes. So as we have looked at our membership needs for 2016 and 17, we have sat down and have a lot of interviews with people and talked to our own members about what's changing, what's our agenda going to be for the coming year, who can best provide input on that agenda. So, for example, for 2016 and 17, we made a conscious effort to bring in people from technology, from some of the extractive industries where we know there are issues on impairment that are occurring. And so we tried to think about, you know, what we need to have an informed discussion on a broad level of topics. Oh, you're all okay. So FASAC's role. So FASAC meets quarterly. We have a, you know, our role is to have an integral advisory role to helping establish and improve the standards of financial accounting and reporting. And we're expected to work closely with FASB in an advisory capacity. The way we do this is we typically put together a steering committee agenda. Our agenda is forward-looking for 1 year. So Alicia and I typically will, we have an interesting process because our group is smaller. We can talk to every single person, usually by telephone, twice a year. So we'll call every board member, spend half an hour with them on the phone saying, what are you seeing? What are the issues that are pertinent to you in your industry? What are you hearing out there? And then we try to incorporate that into our development of a preliminary agenda. And we vet that with a larger group, and we'll talk about that more in a second. But it's important to us that we have those, you know, very informal conversations, one-on-one. And we learn a lot of stuff, sometimes stuff that's not pertinent. But, you know, we learn about families and kids and, you know, for the first 5 minutes. But then we also know about what issues they're facing in their companies. And we also find out that we don't know everything at the meetings. And so we have quite often task forces we form, like I suspect you do. So as we're developing a particular topic, some of the topics drill down pretty deep, and we need help. So we'll quite often form task forces, and those task forces will help us identify people both within the organization and outside in the industry who can help us develop the topics and then make presentations at the meetings. So at the meetings, it isn't just FASAC. We quite often, in fact, I'd say now more often than not, Alicia, we'll invite people from outside to talk about particular topics, and I'll talk about that again in a second. And the way we do our agendas is we try to have agendas that focus on two key areas, one strategic and one technical. So normally, we have one topic, strategic, which talks about longer-term planning and what FASB should be doing in their agenda, what the developments are that we should be thinking about and they should be thinking about, and then tactical, saying, here is your agenda, here's what you're working on, let's address issues you're having that need some guidance from our expertise. So our FASAC members, so we have the same criteria you do. We require they be knowledgeable about problems and the impact about financial reporting or process. And again, the goal is that we have people who have special expertise that they can provide to FASB. We ask for broad representation and have a varied professional and occupational background. So to give you some sense, we don't have the same geographic issues you do. We don't worry about geographic dispersion even within the states. What we do like to do, though, is have people who represent the different major constituents. So we right now have about roughly 10 or 11 users and 10 or 11 preparers on the council. We have five people who are from the accounting firms, so three of the big four are on there. We have two more who are from regional firms who have just a great perspective on issues that we don't think about sometimes. We have three people from professional associations like the American Institute of CPAs. We have two academics, we have one attorney, and two who are in the other category. The other category are really me and another member who are both board of directors who have kind of that perspective not only of having been in the industry but also now as directors. So the procedures we have is we expect people to communicate their individual perceptions of potential effects or proposed effects or authoritative pronouncements, and to provide comments on broader policy questions. And again, these are pretty open comments. So one thing we have is because the room is so small, we pretty much have a policy of no iPhones, no iPads, no nothing. You know, so you don't see people like I was doing earlier sometimes on their iPad responding to questions. We're pretty good about people around the table really focusing on the topics, and sometimes we drill down quickly and drill down deep that we like to have people really focused because, you know, we need input from all members of the table. With the size of the group we have, by the way, I would say at every meeting, everyone speaks multiple times. And it usually is, you know, very interactive. Sometimes we have tough topics, and, you know, you kind of pull things out, but usually we have everyone who speaks, you know, two, three times. We have breakout sessions, and people love the breakout sessions. Our main sessions are webcast, so people can listen in. Our breakout sessions are not webcast. They're private sessions. We don't allow outsiders in those sessions. And the idea is we can have an open and honest discussion. At those breakout sessions, at least one or two board members will attend each of our normally three breakout sessions. And they have questions. And you know, we have a nice exchange, but it can be a very open exchange. People can talk about their companies, what they're doing, what their issues are, that you may not be so enthusiastic about sharing in a public forum. So you can share a lot of good, concise information about your firm and about your competitor's firm, too, by the way, that you wouldn't want to be made public. So, so just one last bullet point. So the what these people do for a living, we have people who are from financial services industry, from the extractive industry, healthcare, technology, manufacturing, not-for-profit, and then entertainment and also international. That's kind of our constituency right now, and you can see kind of why it is based upon the topics the FASB is addressing. So, FASAC operations. So as I mentioned, FASAC members are encouraged to, you know, be honest and open. They're also encouraged to consult with one another and to speak up and write on issues with respect to the work of FASAC and the FASB. So we don't try to limit what people say. We encourage them to be outgoing and to take positions on substantive accounting or reporting matters. We don't vote, so we don't hold up our hands and say, you know, how many people think that this is the right position and how many people think that this is. But much like, you know, your group and your breakouts, we usually reach a pretty good consensus. Sometimes we don't, but at least the opinions are on the table and the board members have a chance to ask questions and at least, you know, help to generate additional thinking from their discussions. So developing the FASAC meeting agendas is always, I think, an interesting part. As I mentioned, Alicia and I usually call the members, we call about half the members every 6 months. That's how it works, roughly. And we meet with the board members. We try to talk to them a couple times a year, so I guess about every 3 months. We also sometimes have special topics. We get board members together to talk about it. We will do it by telephone normally. The first step we have is really to, Alicia and I will sit down, talk about the issues. After each meeting, we will meet with the board members and say, you know, what did you think of the meeting? Did you get value? What are the issues? And then, what else are you seeing that might be useful for our next meeting? And then Alicia and or I will have ongoing conversations with individual board members because each board member has a, you know, an individual area of expertise. And we'll talk to the ones that, you know, are pertinent to the topics we're trying to develop. We usually try to say, you know, are you getting value from what we're doing? And what are the topics you think should be on our agenda? We typically will then sit down with Russ Golden, who's the chair, and say, here's kind of a preliminary one-year forward-looking agenda that we'll have each quarter for the next year then marked out with the topics we think make sense. Strategic based upon where we think they should be going and our committee, tactical based upon the projects that the FASB has underway right now and the issues that they're, you know, going to be dealing with as they go through the exposure draft process. We typically contact, we being now Alicia in this case, contacts the project managers and the technical directors and ask about the issues that they're working on and what they expect to see in the coming quarter and next 6 months. They will also review the technical plan and develop a preliminary list. Again, I'll update our preliminary list of topics we want to discuss. And then at the next meeting, and just before, be a month or so, I guess, before our meeting, we have an agenda meeting. We present our agenda for the quarter, focus on the next quarter, the topics. We'll also focus on the topics for the whole forward-looking year and say, are these still in line with what you think is important? So we rely a lot upon that committee. And I guess maybe a third of the members attend that call, roughly, to talk about the agenda. So we have roughly a dozen people who are on that call, including a couple of the board members, the FASB technical director. We'll have usually an SEC representative who's on the call, and also Alicia and I will go through and lead the conversation. But that's very valuable because it helps us to tweak the conversation and the agenda before we actually meet, you know, a month or 5 weeks later, but also keeps us on our toes for what we're looking out for 1 year. Because typically it takes us about 3 months in advance to just find the right speakers, bring them in, get dinner speakers organized, all the things, you know, that you go through also. And then if an urgent issue comes up, you know, we'll squeeze it in and we'll flip-flop at the last minute if we have to. But again, our goal is for each meeting we like feedback on from each of the board members, are we providing value? Are we answering the questions that are important to you? Are we making you think about things that should be on your agenda in the future? So we just did a quick comparison of, and it may be hard hard to read, but the comparison of FASAC and IFRS characteristics. And you'll see the role and mission are very similar in both cases. The governance and appointment process is very similar. In our case, the reporting to an appointment by the FAF trustees. The size, as I said different before, you're about 50% roughly bigger than we are. We meet four times a year. I think you meet roughly three times a year. We don't have the same logistical problems of flying people in from Asia and from, you know, all over the globe, Africa, to meet, so it is much simpler. And we're a full day. So we typically have a dinner the night before. We always have a dinner speaker. The dinner speaker normally is relevant to the topic the next day. It's meant to be, you know, more conceptual. And then we'll have speakers the next day. But we typically have a dinner the night before and meet all day the next day, and usually manage to get in all of our topics. And again, our mandate probably is a bit narrower than yours just because of the broad number of issues you have to consider, so it's easier for us to do it in one day period. And then topics we've discussed. So this is, I think, kind of goes through the laundry list of the past year, and got lots of boxes up there. But for each meeting, we typically start off with reports, and the report is by the FASB, and typically the FASB chairman makes that presentation. We have a rep from the SEC who will talk to us about the SEC activities and what they're seeing, and that is so valuable because we then get a sense of the issues that at least may require additional interpretation or that may be reflective of the adequacy of the standards themselves. We have a presentation by the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board and finally by the AICPA. We typically have periodically, you know, a discussion of our strategic plan, so Alicia will talk about that in a second. In the past, it used to be done every single year. We skipped a year on purpose, and now we're doing it every 2 years. I'm not sure if it'll go to every 3 years, but at least now it's every 2 years. And we did that because the comments we were providing back from every single year, the recommendations are a lot the same. Maybe one topic would change, but not a lot of different input, because standard setting, as you know, is not a six-month activity. It takes a longer horizon to achieve that. So I mentioned we have two types of issues we talk about. We have strategic, we have tactical. So the strategic issues we talked about were meant to be forward-looking, and the first one was financial reporting boundaries. So we have the term framework versus Lego. So you know those little building blocks, the plastic things? I know you all have those. They're called Legos. Well, so the idea here is how do you balance the standard-setting process between the broad framework and the Legos, the building blocks that are necessary to develop standards. We talked about forward-looking trends. So one of the forward-looking trends, for example, we talked about was, well, this was a session on all forward-looking trends. And it was one of the first things we did to say, let's just talk about the things that are going to be occurring in 3 and 4 and 5 years and identify from that broader list those issues which we should be thinking about strategically. And then we will use that as a means to drill down in our subsequent sessions to talk about the strategic issues in which the board should be focusing. And we had a number of things. We talked about technology and M&A and bitcoins, and a lot around technology, as you might suspect. We also spent time on non-GAAP metrics and the link to aspects of the financial statement process. So your non-GAAP measures, which you've been talking about today, you know, we have this in spades over in the States, too. A lot of good discussion around that and what the role of the board should be in promulgating guidance, and I'd say the takeaway there, by the way, was not so much what they need to do to restrict non-GAAP measures. It was what does the board need to consider in helping to ensure that they're taking lessons from those non-GAAP metrics to see what should be incorporated into GAAP. Should there be things that are disclosed in the financial statements? Should be different ways of presenting information, different ways of segmenting the income statement to make things that are clear between, and in the statement of cash flows, between many of the measures which are used in by companies right now, which focus upon cash earnings, focused upon adjusted earnings per share. But we had a very robust discussion about that, and that has actually cropped up in a couple of our different sessions. We had a session developed on e-commerce and technology trends, and for this we actually brought in several people from some of the high-tech companies that talked to us about some big companies, some small companies, about the issues they're facing, and a lot of discussion around, you know, research and development, with more on the development side, and some of the challenges you have when you have companies that buy R&D versus those that create R&D. In one case, you capitalize it; in one case, you expense it. You get different numbers on the income statement depending upon how you go about acquiring and building your R&D. But also spent a bunch of time talking about the way in which technology companies are expanding. So some technology companies do acquisitions. Some of the smaller companies do very complicated capital structures. When you do that, you have lots of issues about characteristics of debt and equity, and what are you really issuing, and how does GAAP account for those? And so, again, a robust discussion around that. We talked about financial market and regulatory developments. And for that, we actually had some people come in who were with the regulatory affairs groups of some large institutions. And the idea was to talk to us about, you know, what are the issues you're dealing with? And, you know, they had a lot of them are as a result of our Dodd-Frank requirements in the U.S. that require a number of changes, but we also have a lot of state requirements. We have a number of industries that are impacted significantly, including financial services, a lot of congressional mandates that are being issued in addition to those from Dodd-Frank. And they talked to us about those, and we are using those now as a means to help us keep thinking, whenever we're adopting a standard, what are the implications of not only the current rules, but also the rules which are going to be promulgated as a result of some of these evolving regulatory developments. Had a discussion on quality indicators in financial reporting standards. And for that, we had, again, some people come in from industry who do a great job of monitoring restatements, monitoring accounting issues, talking to us about what they're saying. We use that to, you know, help us. And also from the PCAOB came to talk to us about what they're finding in their findings. And, of course, the PCAOB focuses upon the auditors, not upon the preparers, but very helpful and, again, helping us think about, you know, what the indicators are that the FASB should be using and monitoring how they're doing. Is a standard effective? How can they judge whether a standard needs further modification, and how should the standard be developed to ensure that it's not going to result in problems down the future? So that was a discussion of quality indicators. Again, we brought in some people to talk about the next topic, pensions, OPEB, and healthcare. We brought in someone from an actuarial firm, brought in a person who is the head of the benefits and defined contribution area at Ford Motor Company. Great conversation about the direction of defined contribution plans, but also all sorts of retirement plans. And again, to help the FASB think about not just, you know, their focus upon pensions, but there are a lot of newly constructed retirement plans that are becoming even more complex to fit into the current model. And then amounts paid to governments. So for this discussion, we were trying to consider if there wasn't need for additional disclosure about how much companies are paying and the type of concessions being made by governments to companies. So that's some of the strategic topics. Tactical were, you know, things that you might expect to see on your agenda also. One is a simplification initiative. So the FASB has said it takes a long time to do a standard, as opposed to trying to hit a grand slam home run. We just had our last World Series game last night, for those of you who don't know. What's the equivalent in rugby? I'm not sure, but... Well, it's a try? A try? Okay. So I guess if you get a try? Get a try? Okay. Okay. A really good one. Okay. It's a lot of work anyway. That there are things that can be done on a rifle shot basis. Problems that exist, they can be handled quickly, expeditiously, and very effectively. And so part of the simplification initiative is to, you know, look at some of those issues that they can solve quickly. We had a discussion on revenue recognition implementation, you know, which is obviously a major area. Discussion on disclosure framework, on the intersection between internal controls and financial reporting. So let me explain what that means. So so often in standard setting, you develop a standard, you think about what the implications are to a company and financial reporting and to users. But we were convinced that there was also an implication with that should be considered with internal controls. Because as you implement a new standard, you should at least understand what the requirements will be for the internal control infrastructure behind it and the impact it may have upon cost-benefit, but also as you're developing that standard, knowing what the expectations are and wondering whether you should have additional disclosure about the type of things that should be at least considered by preparers in with respect to internal controls in those new standards. A whole discussion of cost-benefit analysis. So unlike, you know, we have a requirement in the SEC, and you do also when a standard is issued, you have to disclose the cost-benefits. And so you take the hours that are being incurred times the rate per hour less, you know, the savings, and there's your cost-benefit analysis. But in standard setting, you can get a cost. It's nebulous sometimes, but you can get a cost. What's hard to get is that benefit. So we spent time thinking about the cost-benefit in terms of, you know, how the FASB should be thinking about that, not just in what they put on paper, but also in terms of what they don't put on paper and how they develop standards. Evaluation reporting standards, we have people come and talk to us about a new initiative to try to develop global consistency around valuation, because we have lots of valuation bodies that have different levels of certification. We talked about what the role of the FASB should be as a tactical matter in valuation and reporting standards. And finally, we talked about the future agenda, and which was a discussion about our FASAC survey results. And that was a long discussion. That was most of the day. And that probably is a good segue because, I'll do it in a second, but that will be a segue to Alicia in a second to talk about the FASAC survey. Dinner speakers, I think I mentioned I put down a couple here that we had on e-commerce and payments to governments around the world. So governments around the world, we actually invited a woman in who was the former assistant to the congressman who was in charge of the Ways and Means Committee, which develops all tax legislation in the U.S., talking to us about future tax legislation. What is the government thinking about in the U.S. in terms of global and domestic taxation? And then what does that mean for standard setting? Because the FASB is considering, you know, the level of guidance they need to develop for tax disclosure. Then we had, as I mentioned, dinner speakers. We had the SEC chief accountant, Jim Schnur. And maybe you were on the job, Jim, 2 weeks when you came to talk to us, I think. So you were very honest. And our dinners, by the way, are also private, no press there, so they can be very candid. And Jim was actually very candid with us. And we had the chair of the Canadian Accounting Standards Board also come join us. That was a great discussion. And then trends in valuation profession, and just someone from the PCC to talk to us about what they're doing, what they're seeing, and their interrelationships with the FASB. So that's what we're doing. In terms of our agenda and how we're structured. And you can see, I think, a lot of similarities between how how your organization works and how ours works. So, you know, your advisory council is very similar to ours in a lot of the objectives. And we go about it different ways some way, and part of it is because we're a little smaller. But, you know, we actually have much less complexity than you must have because of the nature of your mandate. So let me turn it over to Alicia and let her talk about our agenda, future agenda. So, Alicia.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. So one of the other activities that we undertake for FASAC that's really been important over the years is what we've called a FASAC survey. And over time, we've broadened that survey. At some points, it's included people within the public. This year's survey that we conducted included FASAC members as well as members of our other advisory committees. So I'm going to talk about the FASAC survey that we did this year and give you a little bit of background on why we conducted it now, what was in the survey, and then the results of the survey as well. So in terms of why we conducted it now, I know there was a lot of discussion, is 3 years, is 4 years, is 1 year, what's the right number? But for us, the impetus for this year was really the anticipated completion of many of the major projects that were on the board's agenda. So credit loss impairment, leases, classification and measurement, with those coming to completion, anticipated completion, we were thinking, okay, one off, what's coming on next? So that was the impetus as to why we were conducting it now. In terms of the survey itself, it's pretty lengthy. The first part focuses on the overall prioritization of a listing of possible topics. So it includes things that were on the board's research agenda, topics that people suggested over the years that we accumulated, board member suggestions on areas that they were hearing, and also an opportunity for those that participated in the survey to add topics as well. We ask survey respondents to do a forced ranking of the topics, as well as, and this was a suggestion from an academic a few years ago, to do an allocation of points. So you have 100 points to spend on these projects. How are you going to spend your 100 points? And there were some really interesting results as a result on that. What was excluded from the survey were narrow scope projects, so just a thought where it's more of an implementation issue. Projects that are currently underway where they've already issued, the board's already issued an exposure draft. In this process, we were really more focused on bigger, broad issues. The FASB also does have a periodic process that it goes through in terms of agenda prioritization on shorter-term projects that it does, looks at some of the implementation issues that are coming through, brings those to a board meeting, and the board decides to either add them to the agenda or not, but this is separate from that process. In terms of the survey content, some of the questions, as I mentioned, were strict rankings, so it allowed us to do some quantitative analytics of the results. But then many were also more focused on the reasons behind why people thought something was important or what they thought the issue was. What we were really trying to draw out from this year's survey is, I think what Ian was describing during our breakout discussions, is a better understanding of what the problem is and if people agree on what the problem is, as well as some ideas about what potential solutions might be out there, so feasible solutions on how the problem could be fixed. So, for example, on what the problem is, we had some general categories in terms of, is there information that's missing that people want to see? Are the requirements costly to apply? Is simplification needed? And you can see, even though a project might be ranked very high, there may be some disagreement on why people were ranking that high, so that was a really good information point for us. Also, in terms of the process that we followed this year, it's a little bit different than what we have done in the past, and I think we can always learn from each other and learn from ourselves as well on things that work and what doesn't work and try something a little different. So the approach that we're doing this year is the survey is actually the first step for us in narrowing down on a number of issues. So the survey was launched to our advisory groups to help the FASB narrow down the issues that are of most concern. The board's going to consider those issues as well as other thoughts in coming up with a discussion paper that they plan to issue next year. That's a practice in terms of a broader agenda consultation that the ISB's followed and sort of copied that in this. So the FASB will issue that, as I mentioned, in the first half of next year. The discussional paper will include not all of the topics, but a subset of those topics. It will go into more detail on what some of the issues that were raised for each of those areas are, as well as the potential alternatives, and will be open for public comment. In terms of participation, as Steve mentioned, FASAC is the largest advisory group that we had, so certainly there was a lot of great participation from that group. But we also had very good participation from all of the FASB's advisory groups, including the Emerging Issues Task Force, the Private Company Council, and then the committees on investors, small businesses, and not-for-profits. One of the really great things about having a high level of participation across those groups was our results were they really had very different perspectives. It had large multinationals to small companies, including many different industries, as well as great representation from people that practice outside of the United States and U.S. not-for-profits. In terms of the background of the participants, the results included an almost equal mix of preparers and users and practitioners, so it's almost equal there, and then also the other category, which included some academics, associations, and lawyers. So survey respondents, and this is overall survey respondents, rank these five projects the highest. So financial performance reporting, improving the cash flow classification, and that was the title, the description that was included on the survey, but in reading the comments that were in the responses, it became very clear that people were focused on improvements beyond just classification. Got into things like disaggregation of the cash flow statements, method of application, and for certain industries, whether the cash flow statement should be required at all. So, for example, like financial institutions in particular. Pensions and other post-retirement benefits was also in the top five, and liabilities and equity, and intangible assets. Now, for each of those areas, we talked at our FASAC meeting in September, or I'm sorry, it was actually October, about each of these areas on the comments that were made. So, for example, on financial performance reporting, some of the themes that were in the comments were the obsolescence of whether the current model is obsolete, the increase in non-GAAP measures, and the need to find a better way to explain poor business performance were some of the themes. Some of the solutions ranged from changes and ways to focus on income statement presentation, which the FASB is currently undertaking, something like a more dramatic departure from the current presentation model, and then perhaps some increased disclosure or balance sheet solutions as well. on improving the statement of cash flows. Certainly on that one, as I mentioned, there was comments that went beyond classification. There were comments that were focused on diversity of disaggregation. So, for example, one company might have one line for CapEx, and another company on their cash flows might have 10 or 20 lines for CapEx-related items. It talked about classification, the need for better classification, perhaps the need for increased guidance in that area, and then the overall cash flow model as well. On pensions and other post-retirement benefits, that actually was a really interesting area because, as Steve mentioned, we had discussion with our FASAC on that topic at our June meeting. The FASB has a project to improve the presentation and to separate the service cost as a short-term solution or as a more narrow-scope solution, and I think a lot of the comments were very supportive of that approach, but it was unclear in the high rankings whether that was far enough or whether some people, I think, did have a broader solution in mind in terms of eliminating the corridor, looking at pensions more holistically. On liabilities and equity, a lot of the comments on that topic were associated with the complexity of the guidance in that area and ways to simplify it. The solutions ranged from rewrite the guidance to reconsider the whole area to adopt IFRS guidance, certainly solutions and alternatives that have been thought about previously. On intangible assets, I think it was a contributing factor that we had a discussion about technology and the capitalization of development costs and how that's different from international guidance. So there were some suggestions to perhaps consider doing that on the FASB end, but also some ongoing discussions about the accounting for goodwill and other intangible assets as well in the comments there. So you can see from just a short, brief discussion, when people rank these projects highly, there's many different reasons why they did. So I think just taking a poll isn't really the best idea. What we do plan to do is issue a final compilation that includes the raw data, so all the comments that were received, and I know the staff on these projects, as well as the discussion paper, in terms of informing that discussion, I'm hopeful that it will be helpful. We also found that it was helpful to look at the results by stakeholder type, so even throughout all the stakeholder types, they all ranked three projects or three areas very highly. Those were financial performance reporting, the cash flow improvements, and pensions. But there also was some additional overlap in the preparer and the practitioner responses with the high rank for liabilities and equity, and in the user and academic and other responses with a high rank on intangible assets. This next chart shows what percentage of each stakeholder group's points. So as I mentioned, each individual has 100 points. So this is by stakeholder group, their total points, what percent did they allocate to a particular project. So for example, on segments, users allocated 9% of their total points to that area where they thought that was an area where there was a high need for improvement, whereas preparers allocated 0. In other words, that project was dead last for preparers. The chart also helps show the relative spread of points allocated. So, for example, users allocated 15% of their total points to financial performance reporting, so they thought that area was very important. That was almost 2 times the percentage that they allocated to the combined points for their 4th and 5th projects were on pensions and intangible assets, so it gives you an idea of relevance. This next chart is similar to the last, but it shows the results by FASB group. And it's interesting because it can help take out a segment of the population, for example, not-for-profits, and see whether there's a significant difference in what those groups are looking for versus a broad group like FASAC that has a lot of diversity within it. So there's some interesting concentrations within the results there, and we did have an opportunity to go through each group's results with many of the groups in September and October. So we had a discussion with the investor group and not-for-profits with the private companies as well. The investor group and the not-for-profits clearly thought financial performance reporting and cash flow improvements were critical. They allocated 40 to 50% of their total points to that project, or to those two projects, rather. For the private companies, there was a higher concentration on consolidations, which wasn't unexpected, and other comprehensive income. On other comprehensive income, in discussions with those on the private company council, many of the issues that they talked about that they thought needed a solution, like the eliminating the concept of OCI and the overall performance and how it relates in terms of core versus non-core. Many of the same issues that they described were similar to the issues that other people described in financial performance reporting. So there was some commonality in the issues, rather, even though we used two different labels there. FASAC's results were much more widely dispersed among the potential projects, which wouldn't be unexpected given the broad diversity within that council. There were also some slight variations on the top five projects by group as well. For example, FASAC included income taxes and intangible assets within their top five projects, and overall the advisory groups ranked those projects slightly lower. However, we have a pretty significant concentration of not-for-profits in there that, for them, income taxes is not important at all, so I think it's an important area to look at. On income taxes, the issues that people were focused on were thinking about ways to decrease and simplify the requirements. They were thinking about the disclosures and whether enhancements and improvements could be made, and they were also suggesting potential ways to think about achieving greater convergence with the IS 12. I know that was an area that we'd focused on in the past. You might be curious about how this year's results compare to our prior surveys. So we included the results from the last two surveys here on slide 23. Many of the 2013 and the 2009 top projects are currently on the FASB's agenda, as well as the ISB's agenda, too. Disclosure framework, conceptual framework, and financial instruments, including many different aspects, credit losses, classification and measurement, and hedging. The FASB's current agenda also includes some limited scope improvements related to liabilities and equity, and on the presentation of service costs, as I mentioned, on pensions. The remaining top priorities for the 2009 survey have been completed, those being revenue recognition, consolidations, and I say completed, but I think some would argue perhaps we completed aspects and there's more work that needs to be done there. And then the disclosures about credit quality and the allowance for credit losses also was completed. It's interesting, sitting back, listening to a lot of the discussion today about the length of project and the time it takes things to get done, the focus that we were looking at is pretty large, significant projects. But most of the time, if you take a step back and look at the number of projects on the FASB's agenda, the documents that are coming out, many times the trains are running on time. The trains that we focus on are the trains that they have a really long journey, or the trains that don't run on time. So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts our thinking on projects going forward. The FASB remains strongly committed to working together with the ISB and with others on needed areas of improvement in the future, and that's why I was really excited to come here today and to hear your thoughts and to hear the broader dialogue in this area. I know we have an in-depth session tomorrow that's focused on the ISB's agenda consultation, but we thought it might be of interest to just show some potential levels or areas where there may be commonality of the interest on various topics. So anywhere where there's a red star on the next couple of slides are, so these are the projects that are included in the ISB's request for views that was issued this summer. The red stars identify those areas where there could be some commonality. And of course that depends on what the FASB and the ISB decide should be within the scope of their respective projects, but we just wanted to give you a flavor for areas where there was interest both in the U.S. and internationally. Do you want to go one more? And just to close out my comments, I want to reiterate our next steps. So there's some fundamental questions that need some thought in these areas about whether we agree on the problems what the problems are that we're trying to solve, about whether we can find and agree on potential solutions that can be implemented in a cost-effective manner that provide investors with better information than what they get now, and about how we can continue to work together to develop solutions that will result in similar outcomes in various jurisdictions. So the discussion paper that the FASB is developing will help U.S. stakeholders and others weigh in on those critical issues. And so that concludes my prepared remarks. Happy to hear your views or answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Steve and Alicia. You can see the work considerable work being done by FASAC there, and I would argue probably working much more closely with and directly with the FASB than we do with the ISB in terms of that. However, still some useful thoughts and ideas around, and certainly the mandate is much more the technical mandate, whereas ours is moving away from that. So some interesting thoughts around the kind of speakers, the kind of topics being covered there. Comments or questions from IFRS Advisory Council members? Lothar.
Well, thanks very much. That was very interesting to hear how you operate in the US. Just one quick question. Do you have any problems getting users like investors and analysts involved in the process at all?
Okay. So like the ISB and like any standard setter organization, that's an area where we've had a lot of focus and we have continued effort. It is an area where we have challenges in finding people, the right people. We have made a significant investment, as has the ISB, on bringing in investors at the staff level, and also having a strong link to investors through the investor board members that serve on the FASB board. I'd say it's a challenge, but a few years back we thought that it was really important for both the council, its operations, as well as in accomplishing its mission to provide advice to the board, to have a almost equal balance between preparers and investors. So we rebalanced the group a few years ago and have been trying to maintain that balance ever since.
What I'll add is, so it's always a challenge, you're right, getting users and analysts in particular to speak, because they have daytime jobs. And one of their daytime jobs is not meeting with the FASB or the ISB. What I think the FASB's done a nice job with is leveraging existing relationships. So when I was at BlackRock, I'd get a call from, you know, from Hal Schroeder or from Larry Smith or one of the board members saying, we're discussing ABC topic, and it may have been pensions or statement of cash flows, and like to talk to some analysts. So we had maybe, I think we had a list of 13 or 14 analysts who were people we talked to. So whenever we wrote a comment letter to the FASB, we wrote it as a preparer and user. So we got comments from, you know, the accounting policy and the CFO office. We got comments from the analysts, and they didn't always agree. So we'd have basically a letter that would say, here's what we think as a preparer, here's what we think as a user. But those same set of analysts were people that we would call upon to say, will you meet with the FASB? And the FASB has done a nice job, I think, of leveraging contacts they have to identify people who are willing to meet with them to talk about individual issues on a one-on-one basis. So we typically would have three or four analysts who meet with them at a time. And the board will do that in person. They'll travel. Analysts periodically will come to meet with the board. So on RevRec in particular, there was a group of a number of analysts from several different companies who met with the board to talk about some of the issues they saw. And we brought in analysts from different industries to talk about, you know, technology, financial services, just, you know, what the issues are you might face. But it's an ongoing challenge. I will say, as part of FASAC, we have done purposely try to have between 10 and 11 analysts or users on our committee, and have found they've been a great tool to identify additional people to help the board and also to help us. And so we quite often at our meetings will ask individual members to take a topic and spend just 5 minutes or 7 minutes addressing it from their viewpoint. And I'd say almost every topic, unless we have an analyst in that discussion. We certainly, in the last top meeting, we had like two or three analysts talk about a particular topic. It's just they think about things differently than we do, certainly than I did as a preparer. But they just have a different perspective, looking at cash flows, or looking at future trends, or looking at other information, how they group it together, and it's very helpful to the board.
Linda.
Go ahead, Peter.
I'm very interested that your time frame is 12 months, given a lot of the issues we're dealing with are quite complex, and some of them have been on the agenda for a while. What's the advantages of having a 12-month time frame over, say, a three-year time frame?
So the 12-month time frame is just for developing the FACE-ACT agenda of what we're going to talk about, over the next four meetings, quarterly meetings. So it's hard for me to think a year out. I mean, I can't remember my kids' names sometimes. But our goal is to at least be able to think about somewhat strategically about how we want to sequence topics, because we want topics that build upon each other, but we also want, especially on the tactical items, to align them, those with the board agenda. And sometimes the board doesn't know what they're doing a year out. We quite often have topics that will flip-flop from quarter to quarter because they'll accelerate some projects, they'll decelerate others. So it's just in terms of the FACE-ACT meetings, identifying what we're going to talk about, you know, for the next three quarters beyond the next four quarters beyond the most current discussion.
Thank you. Linda.
Okay, I got sort of three comments that I'm going to try to thread together here. One of them is, Joanna, you started the meeting this morning with what are some of the trends that are happening. And when I saw the list from what's the analysts or the users are interested in them, one of them was segmented reporting. And I know that from, so now I'm going to put a third point in here. I don't think we're preparers, I think we're communicators of information. We prepare so that we can communicate, so that word preparers drives me crazy. But when we communicate segmented information, there's a different meaning from segmented reporting from pure accounting that's related to some of the rules around that, and the sum of the parts that the analysts need for their valuation. And sometimes there's some matrix reporting or some other things that will give them that information. So I do think there is more information that the analysts are asking for so they can do some of the parts valuation. And I think that includes some free cash flow, too, on how you're going to expand your businesses. So I do actually think it's quite interesting to survey what are some of those trends that are coming out and maybe put that on our agenda as a key part of the agenda, Joanna, so that we can see what are more and more people asking for. It may not be in the base financials, but it could lead into more of what you want to see in integrated reporting. Because I think also the analysts, when they say performance reporting, they're not talking about your statement of operations. They're talking about your key earnings drivers, some of your non-GAAP measures, et cetera.
And Linda, I actually see the comments that you've made there actually tying in with everything that we've been talking about today, quite frankly, the data points that we were talking about in releasing that information and how all of that is used. And I think it is a real challenge for us collectively, both as communicators and users and standard setters, as to how we actually deal with it. So it's certainly something I think, you know, for us to talk about as to do we as an advisory council have any role in looking at that. Goro.
Yes, what I have found that the many similarities with us, if as advisory council, but the I found that your topics or agenda looks more technical than ours, and I have found that your strategic agenda tend to be a kind of characteristics or attributes of corporate reporting, which may result in specific standards, while tactical looks like more, you know, related to more specific standards. And my question is that how technical you would discuss, or, you know, as an advisory council to the ISB, we are supposed to discuss. Even when we are discussing about this kind of agenda, we are supposed to discuss on the from the strategic or the high level viewpoint. How technical you would go as an advisory body to FASB?
I was a bit puzzled by one slide which says that you were not expected to take positions on substantive accounting or reporting issues, whereas your name is Financial Accounting Standards Advisory Council. So, and indeed, when I look at your agenda, it does seem that you talk a lot about technical issues. So what does this mean?
Sure. Let me take it for seven.
You go
on. Sure. So for starting, the not taking positions is the FASAC as a whole. So as a collective group, we don't generally take positions
on
technical matters.
Yeah, say five in favor or four, yes. Okay.
But we do ask members, and members, one of the differences between FASAC and this group is that the FASAC members are coming generally with their individual views, not representing. Certainly they can share their organizational views, but they're coming representing their individual views and bringing those to the table. And we do ask them to take positions. In terms of Gauro's question on how technical do we get, I think it really depends on the topic. We have, as Steve described, project resource groups for many of the large projects. That's where you'll see people drafting and word changing. You won't see that going on at FASAC. I've never seen a discussion of an EITF issue at FASAC, so we tend to stay away from implementation issues and issues that don't broadly affect the financial reporting system. One of the things that we do is sort of, as you were saying, Gauro, talk more about some of the characteristics of corporate reporting. So if, for example, you take a topic like disclosure framework, one of the discussions that we had involved council members describing the process that they went through to put together their disclosures, how they got that through their system, who did they have a council that met, how was legal involved, and how was that information ultimately shared. There was actually some very stark contrasts on how public companies do that process versus some of the flexibility that's in our system for not-for-profit organizations. So that type of discussion is as technical as we get. Certainly there are times when we're referring to a particular requirement or putting forward a proposal that the board might have and asking for a reaction as well, but it does tend to be at a not a very granular level. Also, Linda, if it makes you feel any better, I'll try to stop saying the word preparers, but we've heard that users also really don't like their title either.
And I guess one of the differences, just between us and FASAC is we obviously, or the foundation has ASAF as well, so that is the technical advisory, and we have definitely moved away, and maybe something to do with the size or simply what we consider our mandate to be. You know, you talk about people talk about their own individual processes. That's not something that we have done. That's arguably what the IFRS or ISB do when they go out, and they, you know, that the individual councils and committees or getting advice around that practical side, whereas that's not the role of this board. So in some ways, I think there are quite significant differences between the two in terms of our mandate.
Well, I'd say, Gauro, what we do is we're probably bookends around what you do. So on the tactical side, we quite often will drill down in a more technical way than the IFRS Advisory Council will. On a strategic side, I think we also try to be more forward-looking. So we will say, here are issues we see that will be occurring in 3, 4, 5 years. Let's think right now about whether we need to have a task force working on this at the FASB to do just basic research on the issue in anticipation of what may require future standard setting, and also to understand what the implications might be on current standards. So, you know, the risk is you promulgate a standard and you've left a crack in a door open somewhere. Especially when you have a conceptual framework, as you know, we're all trying to do more and more, that crack can sometimes be a little less specific, even though we're more rules-based. You know, the goal is to always make sure you at least think about what else may be occurring that may be impacting a standard you're developing today. So I'd say we try to be bookends around where you are, but our goal is not to, for example, have a detailed discussion of the intricacies of derivative accounting, for example. Although some members might like to, we won't do that.
The survey is obviously important to help the FASB set its future agenda, and the survey is helpful if it's representative. And so I see that you sent out around about 100 queries, and I was just wondering why it wasn't sent to a broader group of users, preparers, etc.
Sure, that's a great question, and that's something that we've experimented with in the past. Originally, when the survey was conducted, it was only FASAC members that filled it out. And then there was a period of time where it was sent out more broadly, and we got about 100 or so responses. Those responses weren't necessarily representative in terms of the diversity and the concentrations. This year we decided to take a slightly different approach and ask the advisory group members, because those are members that are close to our process. So we kind of have a pool of people that understand how the board operates, that sees some of the areas and struggles, the challenges that it has, and so we've asked those members to weigh in. However, it wasn't meant to be an exclusive process, so the next step with the discussion paper would be the open, broad process, and the board certainly would welcome and appreciate comments from anyone that's interested in that process.
So, Garth, you know, when we first were talking about the survey for this year, we discussed, given all the advances in technology and the number of tools that are available right now to do surveys, like we have SurveyMonkey and lots of things where, you know, you can put something out there and thousands of people can respond. The challenge you have is, once you get that data in, knowing who those people are and how qualified they are. So the idea, too, with it having a list of respondees who were informed about the FASB process and deliberations and some of the intricacies of the individual issues, you at least had the ability to put them into a categories of knowledge. But the other issue is, too, once you get those in, you know, as Alicia mentioned, we're going to go through a process of not only saying here are the statistical results, but here is all the commentary. And so if you have 1,000 results, you get a lot of commentary. And this is one way, at least, of making sure that, you know, the board had the ability to have meaningful data, but also they follow up. They go through and stratify the data themselves. They have access to it. And they like to know who the individual preparers were for certain responses. They don't have them by name. They can look at the background and identify at least what the background was and why they're responding the way they are. But it's a very good question. We debated long and hard about whether you could have the advisory groups in one body and analyze those, and then have the rest of the world. So, you know, when America was founded, we had a system where the founding fathers did not trust the broad population, so they formed this thing called the Electoral College. And so people vote. And those votes then are used to technically are voted by individuals who have electoral votes. And it was formed because if for some reason the population voted the wrong way, the Electoral College could have the right to overcome them. So that wasn't our goal here. We were not trying to cut out the masses. The goal was really to be able to obtain data that would be useful and understandable and be representative of informed responders.
So, Steve, just to clarify, and you might have said it and I might have missed it, or I should know it anyway. So for the FASB to cut, like we're tomorrow talking about the agenda consultation, which is gone, basically it's a public document that every single man and his dog, to use a real English expression, can respond to. FASB doesn't do that. They use this survey as the basis for setting their agenda?
No, the survey is the first step. So the first step will be the survey. The second step will be the FASB discussion paper, which will be issued in 2016. That will be an open document.
Okay,
we
so
kind of
arguably this is the research, the evidence-based research that says how you put together the agenda consultation. So it's the first step. Okay, all right, that's clarified.
It's the first step. But it's an important first step. Because so what it'll be used for also is in terms of deciding what topics to elaborate on and the level of description, this in part sets the tone.
Now, I thought someone else had their hand up, but he's either you've taken it down.
Yeah, I had same question regarding you have 100 in an advisory group, and what's the reason to ask those small businesses about cash flow? And do you have any general meetings for advisory to make common position with the FASB? I mean, in advisory group, between advisory groups, all of those. No?
There's not a connection between all of the groups. The connection is that the board goes to each of the meetings.
Straight from the group to the...
To a different meeting. They're different meetings. And one of the other advantages that I didn't mention about having this preliminary set or the research, I guess you could call it a research with the advisory group members, is that the board had an ability to have discussions with each of those groups. So we get their data back. We went through the results for each of the groups with the board members, and it allowed them for an opportunity to probe a little bit more about the problems, about potential solutions, and have a good dialogue as well, which I think will be helpful for the discussion paper.
Okay, any further questions or comments? I certainly think that's been useful for us to understand how our counterparts operate, and I think that if we can cogitate, again, another good English word, overnight, and when we're talking about the agenda for our future agenda, whether there are any things that, if you like, come off that, that make us think, oh, maybe we should be considering something like that from our perspective, or believe it might be a topic worth thinking about.